You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 63 of Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if he was in an episode of The Mandalorian and he was one of those crazy frog people, we'd all refer to him as a spawn star. How are you doing?
I'm very well. A spawn star. That's not bad, actually. Yeah, I quite like that. That, I think, is going on a business card.
How's your week been? It's been a busy one.
We've had a nice little chat with the Grand Poobah himself of Ranch Obi-Wan, Steve Sansweet, which we'll play a little bit later. I've received some more Star Wars action figures, which is always good and welcome. And just generally, Mandalorian. Yeah, how about you? How's your week in Star Wars been?
The week has been good. Like you say, we spoke to Steve, which we'll get to later. We'll talk all about Chapter 11, the heiress of the Mandalorian. Can't wait to tuck into that. And I was also part of, and we'll kick off with this, I was also part of a Lego press conference. So this was for the forthcoming Lego Star Wars Holiday Special, which lands on the 17th. And there was a virtual press conference. So basically, that's 55 people on a Zoom call with Anthony Daniels, which was very interesting and very good. Videos off, which was a shame, because it would have looked like the opening of the Muppet Show otherwise, I suppose. Actually, we've got a little clip. This is my question. I was very fortunate. You'll hear how fortunate in a second. But here we go. It's me asking a question of Anthony Daniels.
Do we have time for one more question?
I think that was the perfect segue out. If we want to sneak in one question, we probably could. Let me just see. Mark Newbold?
Oh.
You're out?
Evening.
No, Mark Newbold is rubbish.
Oh, thank you very much. With these, I know you love doing these shows, but how much of the story do you know going in? And do you ever get to suggest any little ideas, knowing 3PO, obviously, as well as you do?
Oh, yeah. On this show, the script was really well formatted. 3PO's involvement is what it is. But normally, and often it will come, my little suggestions will come when I have a preview of the rough animation where we're looking to fine-tune or indeed just put the voice on top of the animation. But then in a scene I will notice a moment, say, hey, we could stick in a comment or like in the distance, which makes a program really seem as it improves it. It's like adding a little more salt or pepper or a little hint of garlic in there. It just bowls out the original story. Because when you're writing an animation, I think, not that I ever have, but the writers cannot think of every reaction, unless it's something like Toy Story, where you've got acres of thousands of people all doing this. You know, on a program like this, resources are slightly more limited. So occasionally I can look at a scene in rough and go, hey, we could just slot in a comment there. And that's how it works. And curiously, that's one of the most amusing and entertaining things for me to do, because it is highly creative, because you're adding color to the scene.
As long as it's gold.
You see, Mark, you have to have the last word. Sorry.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So he clearly loves me, doesn't he?
I was going to say, wow, he really loves you.
But it was very good. It was a great show, I've got to say. They sent us a screening link, so I have actually seen the episode. So much fun. It's about 40 minutes, so it's longer than you would expect for a Lego animated show. And yeah, it was hilarious. I didn't expect it to be as funny. And you can read this on a review, but the basic crux of the show is it's set after The Rise of Skywalker. It is, as you are so fond of saying, canon adjacent. So it's not actually what happened, but it's kind of taking that timeline and doing its thing with it. And basically, Rey is trying to teach Finn the way of the Force and isn't doing particularly well because she's not yet a teacher. So she's trying to figure out how to teach Finn. And as such, she ends up at like an old Jedi temple and gets hold of this MacGuffin, basically, this crystal that allows you to go through time. So every time this thing physically spins, a time portal opens up and you can jump through it and go to a different period of Star Wars history. And to give nothing else away, because that's basically just the setup, they go everywhere.
Oh, awesome.
And they meet everyone. And it's brilliant. And I can't recommend it highly enough. And as holiday specials go, this was good. And he kind of says, without saying it, but he kind of infers that this is probably the first of a new batch of holiday specials. You know, a lot of The Simpsons have the Halloween Treehouse of Horror sort of thing every year. Kind of hinting that this could be the first.
Best for many.
Ever so good.
That would be cool, though, if it is. And also, you know, it's dropping, 42 years to the date that the original holiday special was released. So is this really the first official kind of recognition of the fact that Finn is Force sensitive?
I guess it is. I mean, you've got to watch the episode to sort of divine that for yourself. I don't want to spoil it because it is kind of part of the plot. But it's a really good question because the film hints at it, but of course, and the film's had took Rise of Skywalker's touched so much bashing, and I get why, because it had to condense so much stuff into that runtime. It definitely touches on that. I'll say no more, but it definitely touches on that. And Boyega sort of half-jokingly said, I'd do an animation, I could do it from my couch. If he did come back and do animation, and they did pick up and carry on Finn's story, there's tons of scope. I mean, even this joking Lego cute thing leaves you thinking, well, leaves you asking questions like you've just asked. It's like, you know, is there more to it? There's definitely more to it. So yeah, it's a good point, but yeah. Yeah, they should do something with it. They really should.
Hi, this is John Morton from The Empire Strikes Back, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
The annual Rancho Obi-Wan Gala is for many the highlight of the year, granting those who attend the event not only access to Steve Sansweet's world record-beating Star Wars collection, but also it allows folk the chance to catch up with old friends and familiar faces, as well as raising a little bit of money that goes towards covering the extensive operating costs of the ranch. The world being what it is this year, an in-person gala can't really happen, so Steve and his team have decided to take the event online. And in doing so, we'll open up the event to a much wider audience, so we thought it would be the ideal time to catch up with Steve before the event on November 20th and 21st, and find out more about the virtual gala and also what he's been up to for the last 12 months.
We're here on Making Tracks with the owner and president and grand poobah of Rancho Obi-Wan, Steve Sansweet, to talk all about the 2020 Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Gala. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, guys. Good to be here. And I like my new title of Grand Poobah. That's much better than president, chairman, or any of that other stuff.
There you go. It would look nice on a business card, won't it?
Embossed.
Got to be embossed.
Yes, definitely.
So the virtual gala, it's a bit different this year, obviously, because life is very different for everybody this year. Give us a sense of what the plan is for the virtual gala, which is the 20th and 21st of November.
The 20th is the preview day, the day to download information and actual goodies for the costume contest. This is our first costume contest that we've been able to hold because we can't have one when there are 150 people here in the museum. So, but this is a virtual costume contest with prizes. And there are some info sheets to download about the scavenger hunt. Yeah. So we're going to have a fun scavenger hunt to try to find items that you have in your home and prizes for that, too. And it's like each one of the 10 items that you're looking for have three different categories. So something that's right spot on, something that's a little closer, and something that's, well, you know, you could argue about it. So we're going to have a lot of fun. And so that's November 20th. November 21st at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, the stream starts. And we've got lots of conversations with Star Wars poobahs, to use a word I've heard recently, from all over, from Australia, from the UK. We've got Dave Filoni, Ashley Eckstein, James Arnold Taylor, Sam Witwer, as far as celebrities that you know about. We've got people like Howard Rothman, who was executive for 37 years at Lucasfilm and is responsible for all the stuff we see behind Mark. He was head of licensing for such a long period and developed the program. We have a lot of artists like Spencer Brinkerhoff, Matt Bush, Joe Caroni, Brian Rood, Lawrence Noble, who's responsible for the bronze Yodas, Mark Ratz from Australia, Chris Trevis, and we have sound designer and four-time Academy Award winner Ben Burt, Jerry Vandersteld, another artist, Bonnie Burton, the crafts guru, Ryder Windham, the author who's written probably more Star Wars books than anybody else, Don Bees, the R2 Wrangler, Oliver Steeples, who worked on episode 7, two fan favorites, Alvin Johnson, who founded the 501st, Tom Hutchins, who founded the Mandalorian Mercs and is still head of them, Dan Madsen, the longtime head of the Star Wars fan club, Matt Senrak, the robot chicken, Chris Bartlett, C-3PO's alter ego. I mean, my goodness, I'm talking to a lot of people.
You are.
Ben Stevens, who used to run Dallas Comic-Con and now owns a brand new galactic gallery, an art gallery in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that specializes in Drew Struzan art. So we're covering all sorts of bases with the chats. We've got a prize wheel. You'll be able to buy, just like at the actual gala, you'll be able to buy tickets to get the prize wheel, and Anne will spin the prize wheel, and we'll have all kinds of wonderful prizes, including booby prizes, which turn out to be Star Trek. Which is not a bad prize, because so many of us love Star Trek too. We have a live auction again, so this will be a little bit different because we'll have a bidding software mechanism. But we've got another wonderful blanket from Charmaine Cuddy up in Canada.
Yeah.
And that's always a highlight of our auctions. And this is the child, Baby Yoda, in fall colors. It's and the Mando and the perambulator and the just great stuff. Spencer Brinkerhoff is doing How to Draw a Star Wars Character that everybody can take part in. As I said, we have a separate trivia contest, exclusive gala merchandise, including a patch and a pin and some hoodies. And this is open for the first time. We really can get people from all around the world to take part, because when we do our actual galas here, they're limited to really about 150 people max that we can fit in here, along with all our volunteers to make this thing work. And this is something that we're very excited to be able to welcome fans who have been here before, fans who have never been able to make it, but it's on their bucket list. So lots of stuff happening, lots of stuff coming up, and it's coming up pretty soon. You can get your tickets online at ranchoobiwan.org. And the cost is $30 for a very long day of programming. And you can tune in and off from the stream based on the schedule we'll be posting, so you can, you know, listen to your favorites. You'll get tired of me, by the way, because I'm doing all the interviews. but we're going to have a lot of fun.
Normally you get 150 to the galas. Do you know how many tickets you sold or how many people are expecting to sign on?
We're hoping for many hundreds of people. We need people to join us. We need support this year, especially because we've been closed down on tours. We've had to cancel our gala. There was no Star Wars celebration. And we have the normal cost, plus because of all the wildfires in Northern California, our insurance costs have gone up more than a third. We have to have, we have to do some trimming to have defensible space next to the museum. We need to put a system of sprinklers on the roof. So we've got all these added costs during a period when the income coming in to preserve and keep Rancho Obi-Wan's doors open is really declined quite a bit this year. So, we have a lot of supporters out there, and they've been, helping us, keep alive for this year, and we really appreciate that. But we want to share this with fandom around the world, because we're going to have a lot of fun, and a lot of different kinds of people are going to talk about their Star Wars passion and how and why it started and what they've done in both their careers and in their lives that involve Star Wars. I think lots of surprises and lots of goodies coming up.
Sounds fantastic.
In a year where everything's gone out the window, you've got to view this now as an opportunity to cast your net as far as you can, let as many people know via places like Fantatrax, and let everybody know what's going on with Rancho. Are you trying to see it as an opportunity in that respect?
Yes, absolutely. And we'll be doing some things that we never do on tours, so taking you behind the scenes into the poster room, into the back of the shelf area where we have vintage action figures from all over the world. And so we're gonna appear at the closed off spaces at Rancho Obi-Wan that you never get to see even on a tour or during a gala, except if you're Seth Green and you sneak behind the taped off areas. he had a habit of doing. So
I can imagine.
Who can blame him?
Where do people go specifically to get onto the live stream?
So you can go to RanchoObiWan.org to buy your ticket, and the live stream will also be on RanchoObiWan.org. So once you buy your ticket, you'll be getting a login, and that will keep you active on the site, and the live stream will be available through December 1st. Brilliant. So you'll be able to come back to it. This is an exclusive opportunity. You need to buy your tickets by the day of. You can still buy your tickets on November 21st. There'll be lots to do and lots to see. And we're trying to make it as interactive as possible.
Yeah, that came across, very much came across. With the merch, quick question on the merch. Again, available through RanchoObiWan.org in the shop?
Yes. So once again, when you sign in, you'll see the exclusive merchandise. You'll be able to download information about the scavenger hunt and the costume contest. Want to make sure that people aren't using old pictures of them in costume. So you'll have to have there'll be a little sign that you'll need to print out that will have the Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Gala logo.
Have you got your costume sorted then, Steve?
Well, they don't make oversized Baby Yoda costumes. I mean, I look a little strange, but...
Not that strange.
Get an Ewok costume or a pork costume.
Well, I have an Ewok costume that I wore at Celebration. So maybe that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about the Ewok costume. It's been a decade since I've been in it, but I think I still fit.
So we'll be returning to Rancho Obi-Wan later on for the rest of our conversation with Steve Sansweet, but we're itching to talk about Chapter 11 of Season 2 of The Mandalorian, The Heiress. Where do we start with this one? We did the review on the site. We both wrote quite extensively in our portions of the online review about this episode, and it's difficult to know where to start because there's so much to unpack. So I'm going to throw this hospital pass straight over to you. What did you think of this episode, Mark?
What a great episode. It was fast-paced. It moved the story along, not in a small step, but this was a massive, giant leap, I think, for the Mandalorian story. And it bodes well for the back half of the season.
Yeah, a lot of people have said the first two episodes were filler. I think filler is a daft phrase to use for an episode like this or a show like this. When you can see filler episodes don't throw that kind of technology up on the screen with those kind of guest actors and all the constituent parts that go into a Star Wars TV show. Good grief, we've waited 40 years for this. There's no fillers here. But in terms of plot, you're right. This is the episode where it really does kick off. Mando works really well as a fairly linear, straightforward, you know, scene to scene to scene to scene type of show, because the character thrives in that sort of story setting and it's not too cluttered with other stuff you've got to think about. And that one worry, I think, for season two is if they do bring in all these other characters into the show, then all of a sudden Mando, Din Djarin's as the lead character on his mission with the child, starts to step back and all of a sudden other mythologies from other TV shows come in. So Bo-Katan, obviously we'll talk about that in a bit. Bo-Katan, her storyline now become a part of this Mandalorian storyline, and Ahsoka Tano will become a part of this storyline. And all of a sudden, all the storylines and stuff and plot that they have around their characters suddenly comes into Mando's world, and his storyline could be seen to sort of drop back a little bit and theirs takes precedence. So they've got to strike a balance, but we're at the cusp of finding out whether or not they can make that work.
No, that's very true. And actually, as you said it, there is that kind of feeling when I watched The Heiress for the third time this morning before we started recording, you kind of do get that kind of feeling that at this point, Din Djarin he's along for the ride. He's a passenger in this bigger story rather than the driver, which kind of makes sense because, you know, we are literally talking about one man and a child. There's so much galactic space and scope for the story to develop around him. And I think it would be wrong to expect him to be the pivotal character in every single episode. I mean, he has his moment when he's on the Gazanti freighter and he's kind of taking all those hits and stuff. That's kind of a big, strong hero moment. They're in a bit of a stalemate and they're backed against the wall, so he has to do something. But yeah, really, this is the episode, and it kind of relates back to what Favreau kind of said, whereby other characters are coming in and we kind of almost take a sidestep into their story. And I think at one point we were maybe thinking more of a literal kind of sidestep, like we wouldn't necessarily see the Mandalorian in an episode. But doing it this way is he's now starting to get weaved into all these different events. And that's quite good because we're watching these events unfold either through his eyes or through the child's eyes. We kind of understand that these are bigger events, beyond just a scope of one man. So it's going to actually, I think, really help to broaden the horizons for the actual series. And I guess it's whether or not you, as a viewer, want the Mandalorian to be front and center for every single episode, or if you're happy for him to be swept up in galactic events.
I flip-flop from week to week. One week, I just want it focused on him and the kid because I love traveling the galaxy from their point of view. But then by the same token, like I expect and anticipate both Kenobi and Cassian, especially Cassian, to show you the galaxy at that time and what's going on, because Cassian obviously being pre-A New Hope, you know, there's a lot of build-up to those two battles, Scarif and Yavin. I kind of get the feeling that that show will show us how they got to the point where they were ready to do it. You know, what are we, 4 or 5 years post-Jedi? You know, the galaxy has fractured and changed. We saw in the episode with Cobb Vanth the flashback scene to the Death Star explosion from Jedi, and everyone's cheering, and within seconds, the next bad guys have stepped in and taken advantage. So you're in a galaxy that's kind of lawless, and what does that look like? You know, the Republic, we saw two X-Wings on the Outer Rim. Of course not. You've not literally got two X-Wings patrolling the whole of the Outer Rim. They've got a sizable chunk to patrol, those two guys. That's the feeling I get, is that everybody's stretched thin. The Remnant is kind of probably scattered now and trying to pull themselves together and probably working partially, if not largely, in isolation from each other. You know, that there's not an Imperial network like there was before to make them all work together. There's no one guy overseeing it. So Moff Gideon's probably in charge of a certain chunk of area, and half a dozen sectors over, there's another guy or another woman doing the same thing. And they're not necessarily on the same page because everybody's got slightly different ways of looking at what the Emperor wanted or what the Empire should be. I don't know. This is just me hypothesizing, but I just feel it's a really interesting period of galactic history. So to work Mando and the child, who's clearly hugely important to everything. I imagine when he meets Ahsoka, the child, his importance on a bigger scale than just being protected will become clear.
And that's always a nice thing with these big kind of epic stories, is that come to the end of a season or the end of a series as a whole, and we can look back and go, wow, we didn't necessarily realise that when we saw that episode, say chapter 10, for instance, how important that was. If you've only got 8 episodes in a series, you know, your story real estate is really finite. It's not like we're doing a 26 episode series like we used to do for big US shows. This is 8 episodes of varying length. So it's not even like you can go, right, so each episode's 45 minutes, so we can times the story by 45 by 8, and then that gives us our total running time for our story. This is varying length, so this week's episode was half hour, and that was a perfectly paced episode. You don't just put somebody in an episode and you don't feature them unless they've got a reason to even move the story along or to have a bigger effect on the overarching galactic turn of events. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. I kind of think, and getting into speculation territory already, this week's episode coming up, we won't meet Ahsoka Tano unless it's right at the end. It will be the following chapter, because that's the one at least that apparently Dave Filoni's directed, so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
but I also think that we haven't done with Bo-Katan and the rest of those Mandalorians. I think we're going to see them again, and hopefully it will be a really cool kind of face-off with Din and Bo-Katan against Moff Gideon, and maybe, hopefully, she gets her Darksaber back.
Well, they've got the ship now, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got the ship and they've got the weapons.
So that really does open you up to, I mean, where are we now? This should be chapter 4. So last season, chapter 4 was the Bryce Dallas Howard episode, which was quite a slow, mellow episode compared to the previous three and what was to come. But then you had that crazy action sequence with the Raider, which was basically like Jurassic Park and was so brilliantly done. And then this episode, universal praise for this episode with the action, the character reveals that she's done. Do you think she brought Cara Dune into season 1 and she's brought Bo-Katan into season 2 as a live action character, hasn't she, in the Night Owls and all that stuff? So she's done a great job with that. When you're doing certain special effects on the movies, they don't budget for a specific character. Let's say they're building a creature. They don't budget for a creature. They've got a pot of money that they're given, and that's how much money they've got to spend on the entire project. And I think with a season of The Mandalorian, I would imagine Disney would say, we're releasing this amount of money for the season. You've got to do 8 episodes. That's probably the big proviso. But there's probably nothing to say that you can't have a 20-minute episode followed by an hour-long episode, if story dictates. And we've had 53 minutes for The Marshal, sort of 45 minutes for passenger and now 35 minutes for the heiress. Disparity in running length is quite distinct. So it's clearly giving them the creative scope to tell the story that needs to be told, because this episode didn't feel like, God, was that only half an hour? It's like an episode of Coronation Street, really. Didn't feel like that.
Yeah, it was really packed. Coming back to a budget thing, what they do is they say, right, here you go, here's $100 million. And they work out how much things are going to cost, because obviously stuff like a Crate Dragon episode is going to cost more than maybe the passenger. And that's when you borrow money from Chapter 9 and throw it into Chapter 8 and so on and so forth, and to kind of like even it all out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's something that they've hit really well, which is kind of like, let's not make the episodes longer than they need to be. It's a curse and also a benefit of streaming series, where you don't have to necessarily have the episodes run into a specific length to fit commercial breaks and everything else.
No five-act structure.
Exactly. But what also we have seen in quite a few series, especially on Netflix, I've seen, they do like to drag out some of these series that probably could be about 2 hours or maybe 2.5 hours shorter. Whereas with The Mandalorian, so far from what we've seen from series one and into season two, is that it is very much you get what you need to get the story told and to move the story along and no more. So it's really economical storytelling, I think.
That's the word, economy. That's exactly what I was just thinking. Economy, it's economical storytelling, because you don't... Oh, we've talked about this loads of times on the show, you know, the old Star Trek, the motion picture shot of the Enterprise and all that stuff. You know, you don't need, and I love that, don't get me wrong, but you don't need that. You can show it and set the scene. That matte painting of Mos Eisley with the ships just taking off is just enough to show you where we are, like you saw in The Martian when he's sort of walking back, you know, carrying the child and all the other bits and bobs back. It's economical, but in the best sense, it's judicious.
Yes.
That's probably a good word. It's judicious, isn't it? It's choosing its moments.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been some really great moments.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So what did you think of the translation from animated character to live action character with Bo-Katan?
It helped that it was Katie Sackhoff doing both performances. That's a sure thing. You know, she's a great actress. We all enjoyed her in Battlestar. You know, that's the thing we remember her best for, of course. So to see her unmask and take the helmet off and sort of be in the room. And there's been a few people made comments about, you know, the wig didn't look so good and stuff like that. I didn't really think too much on that, because she got the headband on, which we remember her for, with the little lights on the side. And also just the out of world knowledge that she's the only person who's ever played Bo-Katan, be it in animation or now live action. So that worked well. And having the Night Owls with her was cool. Mercedes Venado, Sasha Banks was great seeing her. The whole setup was excellent. And what I really liked was, you know, these three come in, they're well-drilled, they're well-trained. They've been fighting together for years, presumably. They know the score. And they're a different type of Mandalorian to Din. So that moment when they take the masks off, the child looks up at him like to say, what the hell?
Yeah.
They're taking their helmets off, Dad, you know. And they say, oh, he's one of them, you know, a religious zealot. And all of a sudden he's like, I don't know anything different. This is all I've ever known, because the armourer, you know, that's his enclave of Mandalorians and what they do. And now these guys come swooping in. It's cool. It's when you go back to the Clone Wars and all the stuff that happened in there, what we all knew from Fett way back in the day, Concord Dorn, Mandalorian Protectors, all those names that were floating around and all the different histories of Mandalore and the Mandalorians. And then the Clone Wars sort of defined it and tweaked it and changed it and made it what it is. And now all these other elements are kind of being folded in to show that there are different subsets of Mandalorians around the galaxy that follow slot light on Earth. You know, if an alien landed and they spoke to people of different religions and different cultures and different beliefs, you know, and they only knew one, they'd fly off and write a book about it and go, well, those don't make sense because it doesn't match that. Life's not that neat and tidy, is it? And Din's just found that out, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it could be that he is from a very more orthodox line of Mandalorians,
yes,
and that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, especially perfectly after the sacking of Mandalore by the Imperials, you imagine that if you're in a conclave of Mandalorians, that's pretty much all you're going to know. So that's going to happen. Ironically, we get that ourselves, because when we watch an episode of bits Star Trek or, you know, Star Wars, we read a comic and we meet a species for the first time, whatever we see about that species in that episode is what we then draw on as being
the norm
for all the rest of the species. And for instance, You've got a Mon Cal spaceship engineer who seems to be quite rubbish at repairing a spaceship. Before that, we've seen quite a lot and we've read quite a lot about like the Mon Cal being really good engineers. And it was quite interesting to Din anyway. It seemed like that was kind of what he was kind of semi-expecting, the way he just went, Mon Calamari or whatever it was. So tonally, the episode and the just amazing scene of that harbour was just beautiful. Yeah. I just thought that they really pulled off a very earthbound concept of a fisher port, but they did it in such a Star Wars way that other than the knitting on their, some of their jumpers.
Can't get beyond that.
Which I really, I really got stuck on that. Apart from that, no complaints. Really, and it was great seeing the Quarren. And I've seen a few people kind of like compare them to Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. It's a similar kind of effect, but that makes sense, really. You know, that kind of character design would have something like that anyway. So, on one hand, we think that the Mandalorian and Din is such a kick-ass character, but he does always come across as a bit naive and does seem to be quite easily tricked.
One quick thing on the Quarren. Hal Hickel, animation supervisor at ILM, and he won his Oscar for Dead Man's Chest. But I don't know if that Quarren was done via CG or whether it was an animatronic with the tentacles. So we don't know these days. It's difficult to tell. The line is blurred there. We know he's a grafter. He doesn't give up. He takes a breath and cracks on. So he's a grafter. We don't know whether these characters are. They're probably so well trained and so well drilled, they don't get into situations like he does. You know, he kind of gets himself into trouble sometimes, doesn't he? He's kind of impetuous and a bit bullheaded, and he's focused on his mission, which is protecting the child and getting him back to his people. So that's great for us to follow as an audience. But I did kind of feel that in this episode, right at the end, Titus Welliver's character, the Imperial captain, in the cockpit of that ship, which was probably my favourite sequence in the cockpit with those guys, I thought was brilliantly done. He's decided to take the ship down. He's killed his two officers and he's taken that ship down for the Empire. And they managed to stop him. There's a moment when it's like 9,000, 8,000. And they don't know what to do. They're pinned down.
Yeah.
And it's Mando that's just like, if I take the hit, I take the hit. And he just gets that. He just goes for it, just walks through. He's the tank, isn't he? He just walks through it, you know, and he gets the, and he's the ingenuity in that moment. They've run out of ideas. If he doesn't do what he does, they'll just have to bail. They'd go to a hatch and escape, I think, if they could.
Yeah, totally.
If they could, I mean, you know. But of course, his mission is a different mission to theirs. He's just learnt of their mission, you know. And for them, if they lose this, it's a battle. If he doesn't get back to the kid, he's lost the war. So he's more determined on his mission than they are on theirs. To them, it would be an obstacle, or it would be a setback. But to him, it's like, I failed the kid, failed everything that I promised I would do. And his promise is his bond, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's an interesting kind of like difference between how they all operate. Because like bounty hunters, we always kind of say are morally grey. And even Din has done some questionable things, but he's got his own kind of like ethics or code of conduct that he's now seeing through. So for Quest and the child, does he put the quest of actually reuniting the child above actually the child's welfare, or is it that he generally cares about the child? Does that make sense? And I think you can look at that and can go, well, if he kind of only really cared to make sure that he kind of fulfills his quest and fulfills what the armorer set him to do, his task, he possibly might have even actually taken the child with him. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he's left him with the frog people, and we have that lovely moment with the frog people and Baby Yoda where he's kind of playing with a little kind of frogling and that. And I was a little bit nervous. I thought, is he just going to try and like grab him and eat him?
I thought that, yeah.
But actually, it kind of shows a different side, and it shows kind of like the proper infant side of the child, which again, we haven't really seen properly since Chapter 4, since the last time Bryce Dallas Howard directed an episode. You know, both of her episodes have really given Baby Yoda the chance to kind of be a child and be somebody of his age rather than kind of swept up in all this kick-ass adventure and swashbuckling events. So it's an episode which has got like some nice different layers to it. I think it's the highlight of the season so far, but obviously we're only three episodes in, so see what happens next.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
So the Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Gala takes place this coming weekend, the 21st of November, online at ranchoobiwan.org. And we caught up with Steve Sansweet to talk about the gala and all things related to Rancho Obi-Wan. So let's head back to Rancho Obi-Wan for our conversation with Steve.
Mandalorian, obviously, everyone's buzzing about it. Everybody's talking about it. What do you make of it? Are you enjoying it?
I am thoroughly enjoying it. First episode, just really, it was worth the wait. It just brought me back in. The storyline, the special effects, everything was just fantastic. And then seeing that character at the end. I wonder who that was.
No idea.
No idea.
Random clone.
Yeah, it was random clone. He looked familiar.
Aquaman's dad. And what else is happening at the ranch then? What else is going on? Have you been able to take the opportunity of the time to do changes there, make additions and changes and different things?
Well, we should have been, but things that have come in are just sort of randomly placed. We'll wait till we can open again, and then there'll be a week of cleaning and preparing and putting things back in their rightful places. We bought a new flat file for the posters. We have totally ran out of space with 10 architects flat files, 10 drawer flat files. So the poster collection has grown with the sequels and with the art and everything else. So we've added a new poster file, and we've made some other changes. We've added things to the shelves, but I think it'll be a very fresh look when people can come again. We can't do social distancing because of the nature of the museum. And so it's going to be a little while before we can open again. It will be sometime into next year, hopefully next year. I'm hoping that at least, you know, by the summer, we'll be able to have tours again.
And you were thinking of doing the gala this year. I think it was June. Projecting out, is that your intention for next year?
We may wait a little and go back to our fall time frame because of the pandemic, and we have to just sort of play it by ear and see how things are going, and we'll be fairly flexible on that, but we would love to have an in-person gala again next year.
If the virtual gala is a success, is that something that you might revisit if this is a blistering success and you have a million people watching it?
Yeah, I'll take 1,000 people, thank you very much. But yes, I mean, the virtual gala, we'll see how it goes. We've been putting a lot of work and a lot of effort into it. But the first time you do something, it always takes that. There's a real learning curve.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can use that experience to do things like this again. The weekend when the Star Wars celebration was supposed to have taken place in Anaheim, we did 2 live streams showing off items that would have been at the Rancho Obi-Wan booth at Celebration. So it was the 40th anniversary of The Empire Strikes Back that we were concentrating on. And we had a lot of fun doing that. We got a lot of great feedback on that. So, and we had 1,000 people who signed up for that for the first day. So people were watching that. That was great. So yes, we have to take advantage of all the technology that exists and just do things differently when it's essential.
So are you still doing creating content for the virtual videos and stuff that you were doing earlier on?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's another thing that we've done this year is open our virtual museum, and that's still available on a subscriber basis. And there are 5 different levels to subscribe to help support Rancho Obi-Wan, but also get lots of content. Behind the scenes video, me talking about my various careers. I don't know why anybody's interested in that, but people seem to be. I keep coming up with these cool stories about my time at the Wall Street Journal and executives who were playing fast and loose with the rules, shall we say, writing stories about that. And I've had fun doing those videos, and we show new additions to Rancho. And the virtual museum is something that we will absolutely continue servicing and adding more content to. So it's been really good for us.
Yeah, it's such a great idea because Rancho is a brand, as a name, and is something that's recognized within the community. Like you say, it's a bucket list place for a lot of people to go. Not everybody can get there. So to expand in that sense is a smart move.
And it's amazing to me that the visitors that we've had from all over the world, from Dubai to New Zealand to Hong Kong and Japan and all over Europe, Russia, it's been really gratifying. And there's nothing more that I love interacting with fellow Star Wars fans and talking about, you know, having them ask me questions and me asking them questions and finding out how we share that passion that we have for Star Wars and how it's lasted all of these years and decades and how it's changed and how many entry points there are for people of various ages and despite different backgrounds, way different backgrounds. And then the whole collecting aspect of Star Wars, which is really unique by its level and the amount of stuff that's out there. And again, various different points to be able to get into Star Wars collecting. And you don't have to be a millionaire. I mean, I was a journalist most of my life and then went into marketing at Lucasfilm. And I can tell you neither of those made me a millionaire. And I've been able to spend my income for years on Star Wars merchandise. But, you know, it's what I chose to do. And I'm not poverty stricken. But all of the items, just about all of the items in the museum, except for those that are donated, are owned by me. Mm-hmm. And then none of the money that we raise goes to buying new stuff for the museum. It goes to all of the things that make the museum work behind the scenes and insurance and security and everything like that. People are not supporting my habit. I'm supporting my habit.
You know, you've been a fan since day one, or, you know, before the film release. Is there still parts of the merchandising that still gets you really excited? I mean, what kind of things do you really collect these days?
Show us your Baby Yoda.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, wait a second. That's a big one.
Yeah-ish. Yeah, same one smart.
This is the Smell-O-Vision. This is the Scentsy one.
Yeah.
The scent?
Scentsy. He's got a little smelly pack in him somewhere, and he smells lovely.
Well, it's not like you have to change his diaper.
No. Okay. I wouldn't go that far.
This is the Build-A-Bear one with the sound chip. I love it.
Do you have a whole section now of a museum dedicated to Baby Yoda?
Well, there will be. Yeah. The things are coming in, you know, everything from the hand sanitizer and now Sam's Club, one of the big discount grocery stores or big box stores, has Baby Yoda grapes in a wooden carton with an embossed logo on it. And we don't have any Sam's Clubs around here, so I'm hoping that I can find one of those. But Baby Yoda grape box. I mean, who would think?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yogurt, cereal, fruit roll-ups, you name it, they're making it. I just saw an ad for a flying Baby Yoda, sort of a helicopter type thing that you can use inside that has a sensor so it won't crash into walls.
Wow. Who thinks of these things? Speaking of grapes, something we never mentioned about the gala was you're doing a wine tasting session.
Yes, unfortunately, the time for buying the tickets to the wine tasting has expired.
Yeah.
But we got more than 50 people to sign up for the wine tasting. Mm-hmm. And for those states in the U.S., the majority of states, but not all the states, Skywalker Ranch will be shipping 2 bottles of Skywalker Ranch wine in a special gift box, a wooden gift box with the Skywalker emblem on it. And we'll do a virtual wine tasting with Tom Johnson, who's director of Skywalker Vineyards. Wow. And he'll be explaining the different tastes of the wine as you sip it. And I think that's going to be really great.
Yeah.
So they've done some Zoom chats and wine tasting. So this will be really nice. I'm looking forward to taking part in that and getting a little soused after I do 30 interviews.
Well, I think we're all planning to watch, obviously, with a glass of something red and pleasurable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time this morning, Steve.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
thank you very much for your time and for your longtime support of Rancho Obi-Wan. We really appreciate it.
Brilliant.
See you, Marks.
Take care.
It was a lovely old chat with Steve. Mark, have you actually got your tickets yet for the gala?
I have. I'm not doing the wine tasting because they couldn't send the wine to the UK. They can only send Skolka Vineyards wine within certain states of the US, and it would never get to me in time anyway. But I'm going to go down to my local Morrison's and buy a nice bottle of red
That's all we've got time for. If you want to ask us a question, if you have a question, or if you have any thoughts or opinions about anything that we've spoken about this week or any other episode that we've done, you can get in touch with us and Mr. Newbold is going to tell you how you can do it.
If you want to be a part of the action, stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTrax.com or check out the FanthaTrax app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. We're always on the lookout for questions, so please send those through. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, please, some 5-star ones would be really nice, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Be sure to watch Good Morning Tatooine, our weekly news show, live on Sunday evenings over at Facebook Live, and later in the week on YouTube at FanthaTracks TV. And you're on this episode, Mark, aren't you?
I am. I'm really looking forward to it.
I will be watching and sending in insulting quotes through my little messenger just to throw you off.
Great. Where's my Banhammer?
Banhammer. What a great name. Brilliant. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, take care, everybody.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's Making Tracks.
Edit.